For the life of me, I can't remember what I talked about on the last show.
Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
Excuse me. And if I'm having a shitty day, I'll make sure you do as well. No urine test. Nothing. They're getting into something they have no idea. Contorted into a donut.
And now, today's episode of the Ron Van Dam Show.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
I remember now.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
I remember now.
Whatever.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Okay, good.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Hey, how are you? Happy Columbus Day to you. Today we're going to talk about Columbus. He didn't discover America, he actually discovered Guam. What? No, that's not right. Well, he didn't discover America, oddly enough. And besides, there are people here already. Come on, man. Give me a break. That's like me going to France and getting off the plane and declaring, I discover France. No, you didn't. There were people here already in restaurants. What are you talking about? You discovered. Maybe you discovered it for yourself. But you didn't discover it like nobody knew about it. It's not like all the Indians, the American Indians, are walking around going, "Well, I didn't know we were here. I thought we were walking around doing stuff, but this guy's telling us he discovered us." What an asshole! It is Columbus Day. It's the most confusing holiday of the year. My trash is being picked up this morning. And it's Columbus Day, and I feel like calling the trash people, which is not a pleasant thing to call anybody, the rubbish removal people. I'm thinking of calling them and saying, "Excuse me, it's Columbus Day. What are you picking up trash? You don't have to pick up trash unless it's really important, and you're choosing to pick up trash on a holiday." Well, you know, I'm telling you. Columbus, man, he'd be so happy. You know how we celebrate Columbus Day? We sell mattresses. Yeah, mattress sales. Yeah. It's like Columbus came over on a mattress. No, he didn't. Ron, calm down. What do you care? You're right. Here are 10 facts about, not a fax that you sent on a fax machine, 10 facts, F-A-C-T, F-A-C, whatever. I could start the show again, but to be honest with you, what's the point? Just be the same. Here are 10 facts about Christopher Columbus that you probably didn't know. 1, he was Jewish. Wait a minute, that's not right. I made that up. Christopher Columbus was not his real name. Get out. That's like going to a strip club and the dancer tells you a dancing name, but it's not a real name, really? I didn't know. The name he actually was given when he was born in Genoa, was Cristoforo Colombo. Cristoforo Colombo. I remember Colombo. He was that detective with one eye on TV who kept saying, wait a minute, wait a minute. That is Cristoforo Colombo. Christopher Columbus began a career as a seafarer. I don't know what the fuck that is. At the age of 14. That's young. And later, he supported himself by selling maps and charts. Maps and charts, $3. Excuse me, sir. Do you need a map or a chart? Do you know where you are? We haven't discovered GPS yet. $3, maps and charts. Lemonade, $4. Cristoforo. Did you know that half of his voyages ended in disaster? Well, that didn't work out, did it? Half of his voyages ended in disaster. On his famed 1492 voyage, the flagship, the Santa Maria, ran aground and sank. What? I didn't know that. Causing him to leave 39 men behind at a settlement named La Verdad. He was supposed to return to Spain loaded with spices and other valuable goods and knowledge of an important new trade route. Instead, he returned empty-handed without the best of the three ships. What a jerk. On his fourth voyage, his ship rotted out from under him, and he spent a year with his men marooned in Jamaica. What? Hey, man, you want to buy a map, man? I did not know this stuff. Ron, you're teaching us stuff we didn't know. Yeah, and didn't teach us in history class in school, did they? No, Ron, they didn't. You're better than that. Queen Isabella was hesitant to fund Columbus's voyage. I think we knew that, especially since he sank half the ships. Columbus still had a hard time trying to find... It took her 6 years to agree with Cristoforo Colombo. Having given up, he was 4 miles out of town when the queen, when the courier caught up with him and shared the good news that she will fund the latest disastrous trip. Queen Isabella, come on, man. That's a bad investment. Another fact about Cristoforo Colombo. Once he received the money and the ships, Columbus still had a hard time trying to find a crew. Many people still believe that the earth was flat, like the Trump supporters, and that at some point a ship would hit a waterfall and fall off of the side of the earth. Well, you don't want that happening. They thought the earth was flat. I can see that, because if you look out over the ocean, it does look like it just drops off all of a sudden. So with the mentality of Cristoforo, I would say that's, you know, it's a believable thing. And with the intelligence of many Trump supporters, I can also see why you would think the earth is flat. Only difference is now we have knowledge and pictures from space that the earth is round. People are insisting that it's flat. Really should be committed into an institution. I mean, let's face it, there's no way around that. Christopher Columbus's first voyage with the Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria began on August 3rd, 1492. On October 12th, 1492, a sailor on the Pinta shouted, "Land!" Okay, that's good. Christopher Columbus and his crew were actually seeing the island of San Salvador. Oops, we are looking at the wrong land here. It was San Salvador, 375 miles off the coast of Florida. Christopher, why don't you buy one of your own maps and charts? That would have helped. Even though he made 3 return trips west, Christopher Columbus never actually stepped foot on the mainland of North America. Did you hear me, kids? Christopher Columbus never stepped foot on the mainland of North America. What a horrible thing we've been told. It's not true. Columbus died in Spain in 1506, and his remains were kept there for a while before being sent to Santo Domingo in 1537. You remember 1537. That was a great year for wine. There they remained until 1705. That's a long time. That's like over 100 years. Wow. Bury the guy, will you? At that time, they were sent to Havana. And in 1898, sent back to Spain in 1877, however, a box of bones bearing his name was found in Santo Domingo. Since then, two cities, Seville, Spain, and Santo Domingo, claim to have his remains in each city. The bones in question are housed in elaborate mausoleums. Wow. This guy is messed up all over the place. I think he was on pot or something. He was high on marijuana. And I don't know what the rules or the laws were then. I don't think you'd get pulled over by another boat if you were high, sailing high, you know. I really don't know how that worked. I don't even know how it works now, to be honest with you. I have no idea if marijuana is legal now or not. Nobody told me anything. I wonder what Christopher Columbus was wearing.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
As I understand it, Christopher Columbus never wore pants, very similar to Donald Duck. It's true. He was a pervert, and he used to walk around Spain without any pants on, and he got a lot of criticism for that. Queen Isabella, thought, though, that was very alluring, and that was the real reason that she funded his trips, to get him the hell off the mainland. I mean, Chris, if we give you money to sail to America, will you get out of Spain? Crap, man. Put some pants on. That's why his crew got marooned on a desert island when one of his sailings failed. I can't tell you what an ugly experience that maroon thing was. Not good.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Refined entertainment for a sophisticated audience. Who sometimes enjoy a good fart joke?
Are you serious? Are you serious? It's snowing out?
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful.
Well, it's Columbus Day. It can't be snowing on Columbus Day.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Well, that's because it's not snowing. I just haven't played that music in almost a year now. It is going to snow someday, and the earth is also flat. I don't know if it's ever going to snow again. I have no idea. I don't really care. What am I even talking about? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Columbus Day is very confusing. I don't understand what's open. Well, I kind of do, and I kind of don't want to. I know all the stores are open, and there's a mattress sale. I know the stores are open, and you can buy stuff on sale, because Columbus, he sold maps and charts in the streets in Europe. So obviously that's a big sale day. Christopher Columbus was the big carny of his time. So stores are open today. Banks? No. You can go to stores, but you can't go to the bank to get your money out to go to the stores. That's why we have ATMs. That's why they have ATMs. Schools are closed. Schools are closed always. If there's a reason to close a school, they will close it. And it's not because they don't want the kids to learn. It's because mothers don't know what to do with their kids. They have to go to work and stuff. And because a lot of offices are open, but the kids are home today. It's one of those screwy holidays. What do you do with the kid? What if you don't have relatives in the area that can watch the kid? You know what I'm saying, man? Schools are closed. Post office is closed. It's a federal holiday. Post office is closed. You won't be getting any mail today. As I said, many of the trash collectors will be collecting trash on Columbus Day. I think it's proper. I don't get it. I mean, on Labor Day, when you're celebrating people working, you give them the day off. I don't understand that. If you're celebrating people working, they should be working and celebrating. I don't get anything now. I don't get it. Christmas is always on December 25th. Why? When I had learned that this Jesus thing didn't happen in December. Notice how I refer to the event as the Jesus thing. I don't know. I have no explanation for that. All I do know is the world is not flat. I've pretty much figured that out. Because I've driven over the horizon and I didn't fall off. So, and I know that people fly like across the ocean and around the world and they still see it underneath them. So it's round. It's round. Come on, it's round. It's round. Of course, Trump could obviously convince us that it's flat, you know, with his truth be told, kind of attitude. We have a couple of interviews today. One of them is with Christopher Columbus. Why, I thought he was dead. Well, no, he's not. No, he's not. We do have a couple of interesting people that I would like to turn you on to, not in a sexual way, certainly. That would be ridiculous. But in an informational type of aspect. Are you still with me, by the way? Are you still in the room? Are you even in the room? Because, you know, one would not know otherwise. Let's talk about you know, there are people being fed drugs that they don't really need. I think we've known this for a while, since we knew that the earth was flat. So I thought it'd be interesting to talk about this. I mean, that people are being prescribed drugs that they don't really need. Why? Let's find out. Hello, doctor.
Hi, good morning, Ron.
Dr. John Conto joins us now. He's vice president of Optum Advisory Services, which plays a pivotal role in electronic health records. Electronic health records, I guess we're aware that they occur here. We're talking about what we coin as unnecessary care. What exactly would that entail?
So we did a study with Cedars-Sinai that looked at how the use of computer systems and alerts that you can launch in computer systems at the point of care with providers can affect the decision-making of providers. And what we found was, and the first time this has been demonstrated, that these systems could reduce length of stay by 6%. So when doctors followed the alerts in the study, there was a 6% reduction in length of hospital stay and a savings of almost $1,000 per case, which is about a 7% reduction.
You know, there's a segment of the general population that feels that a lot of these unnecessary care and expenses are performed in order to receive hospital revenue, doctor revenue, et cetera.
Yeah, I think our study really focused on helping providers adhere to published evidence-based guidelines.
Good.
And we've known for some time that there's often a lag of months or even years after well-established evidence generates these guidelines for providers to be able to actually regularly follow those guidelines.
Yeah.
That's how the study was designed.
Mm. Do a lot of these a lot of these incidents occur because hospital and doctors just want to protect their behinds. I put that in a very stupid way, but because of, for insurance purposes, like, you can't take any chances. We better order these tests, even though we know they're not necessary, but it has to be done just in case, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. So people have suspected for a long time that defensive medicine, we call it, contributes to some of this overspending in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, there's actually not much published data.
Okay.
There was a study published earlier this year that estimated there was that that type of defensive medicine contributed to 5%, say, of the overspending in healthcare.
Okay. Give me an example of when this unnecessary care would be applicable, something that happens perhaps frequently.
So an example might be the use of antibiotics for a viral infection.
Okay.
Where, yeah, a patient may even ask their doctor for it, but the evidence shows that not only is it not helpful, but may hurt you by causing side effects from the medication or contributing to the development of resistance to antibiotics for a person. Another example might be ordering a CAT scan when you don't really need it. And while CAT scans sort of seem benign, they come with a toll of radiation on patients, which can have adverse effects.
Yeah. You know, I grew up at a time where there was a family doctor, lived in a house and had a little office on the side of the house. And then there was a hospital, and pretty much that was the whole ball of wax there medically. And now it's so different than when I was a little child back in the 1900s, whatever. Now it seems like it was so much more pure then, and a doctor would never prescribe something that you didn't need. Is it good now that we're in the large medical group area? My belief is that most doctors don't want to overprescribe. That's not necessarily the way that they want to go.
Yeah, I think that's right. I absolutely believe that most doctors do want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But the challenge is that it's hard for doctors just to keep up with the onslaught of information.
Yeah.
There's 20 or 30,000 medical journals out there. Medical knowledge is estimated to double every 73 days.
Mm-hmm.
So for an individual physician out there, it's really hard to keep up with that. And we're excited that this study at least gives us some hope. And the first time we've been able to demonstrate that computer systems can help doctors do a better job of that.
Yep. Sounds good. Where do we get more information about this?
So the study was published in the American Journal of Managed Care, and can go to their website, or folks can go to Optum.com.
Very interesting. I think it's a win-win for everybody, almost. And I know patients and doctors are totally onto this, and it's a great idea. It's a good use of medical technology in a different sense. Thank you so much for your time today, John.
Great, Ron. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Okay, bye. God, say goodbye, leave, will you? Now we're going to switch gears a little bit. We've got another interview standing by. This is about gun violence, which is, you know what I'm saying? Let's speak to Margaret. Margaret Huang joins us now. She's Executive Director of Amnesty International USA. And we're talking about, we all know what Amnesty International does. We're talking about gun violence today. And why was the subject chosen to pursue at this time?
Thanks, Ron. Amnesty has been monitoring human rights violations around the world on so many issues, but here in the United States, gun violence has become so prevalent that it actually amounts to a human rights crisis. Simply put, there are too many guns, and there are insufficient laws to keep track of them or to keep them out of the hands of people who intend harm. And that leads to a relentless reality of violence. We felt that by doing a report on this issue, we could really call attention to it and join with communities across the country who are fighting to stop this problem.
Mm-hmm. The United States has this significant problem as opposed to other civilized countries where guns are more controlled. They don't have the kind of violence we do, but of course we've got the NRA here. Is the NRA pretty much the stumbling block for this whole movement?
I think that's a fair question. What is very clear to us and what we detail in the report is that it is political inaction that is the problem here in the United States. It is not that we are in armed conflict. It is not that there are other reasons for this violence. It is simply because our officials refuse to take action. And as you say, this goes to the cornerstone of what human rights are about. the ability to live your life in security and dignity, to be free from fear, is at the very heart of human rights. And because the government has failed to do anything about this crisis, it should be held accountable.
Absolutely. Do you have, through surveys, do you have any idea about how the public reacts to this? Obviously, nobody likes gun violence, but there are those who side with the NRA that say it's a right for a citizen to own firearms, therefore I will do it because I have the right. Do we know how many people believe that?
Actually, there are a lot of publicly released surveys out there that do show tremendous support for the kind of regulation that we're calling for in the report,
right,
including, for example, members of the NRA. What I think is important to know is Amnesty is not addressing the issue of whether or not people can and should own guns.
Correct.
Amnesty is saying that the government has an obligation to protect others from being harmed by guns.
Right.
And to do that, really basic regulations such as comprehensive background checks or ensuring that all guns are registered and licensed to users who are trained and how to use them appropriately. Those are the kinds of things that could actually cut the number of deaths from gun violence significantly every year. And I think many members of the NRA actually agree with us that that would be a really good step to take.
Well, possibly they might agree with you. I know states individually can throw their own laws down about who can possess these firearms and to what extent what types of firearms can be possessed, or if you need how heavy the background checks may be. Is it not the campaign toward the states to take action as well?
Well, exactly, and I think you've hit on it. I'll just note, a few decades ago, there were tens of thousands of people who were dying in car accidents.
Right.
And it became a public health crisis.
Right.
And the government decided that because it was such a significant crisis, that they needed to introduce regulations that would help reduce the number of deaths.
Mm-hmm.
So they introduced the seatbelt laws, and that started at the state level.
Yes.
That is absolutely what Amnesty is doing this fall. We are joining with allies in three states to campaign for legislation that would reduce gun violence in those states. And our hope is that by demonstrating the popularity of this effort, the collaboration and the alignment of the population in those states around those bills, we can actually build some momentum to see change happen at the federal level as well.
It's interesting that there have been some mass shootings nationally, such as the Vegas situation, but when you get down to the school shootings, that's something that nobody seems to tolerate except for real crazy conspiracy theory people. And the movements are so intense. This last one with the students actually affecting everything on a national level. But then unfortunately in our society, time always seems to just sweep things aside. And the intensity, I'm sure, is still there when you're in the thick of it, but on a national level, the intensity of the school shootings drops off until you have another one. And I think that's a social responsibility problem.
I think that you are right. There is a very high level of activism across the country on this issue. I know, for example, that many of the student leaders from Stoneman Marjorie School in Florida are now actively campaigning to have people register to vote and to ask the people, the candidates who are running for office, to commit to passing laws that would reduce and end gun violence.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe that is the way we will make change happen. If more people express their horror at what's happening and more people get involved in the fight to stop gun violence, I do think that you will see the impact at both the state level and the federal level of government elections.
Yeah.
And that's what we need.
Yes, and those young people are right on the doorstep of voting. In fact, some of them are even there at this point for the next election. So that is should be a concern to a lot of people. How do we
absolutely?
Go on.
Yeah, I think you were going to ask me, how can people find out more or get involved?
You're psychic. You're also psychic.
I knew that. Exactly. So I would invite everyone to visit our website. It's www.amnestyusa.org. And we have a lot of information there, not only about the problem of gun violence here in the United States, mm-hmm. but also what people can do to help stop it. And it can take 5 minutes of your time, or you can get a lot more involved in our campaign. But we invite everybody to join us. This is a problem we have to tackle together.
Yeah. Thank you for keeping the subject alive, because that's, I think, even more than half the battle.
Thank you, Ron.
You take care, Margaret. Bye-bye. Very, very nice. Well, I'm talked out for today. Talked about gun violence. We talked about prescription drugs. Talked about Columbus. Oh, God. The earth is really flat. I mean, come on. Isn't that enough? The stars are really painted on the ceiling. Come on. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace. Buy a mattress.